Good morning. The chair calls the third meeting of the ALA Council to order. Would all councilors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? At this meeting, we will continue to follow the same rules that were approved at ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn off your cell phones or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please do that outside of the council chambers. Also, please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. Please only use that descriptor. Your voting record is at your place. You should have a blue card for this morning's meeting. Please write your name on your card now. If you leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois and Gregory Wood over at the projectionist table. Cards without names will be voided, so it's important. Please be reminded that this meeting will adjourn at 9:15 a.m. in order for all of us to go over to the Las Vegas Convention Center, room N249, for the closing general session, which starts at 9:30. And we all know it takes 15 minutes to walk over there. There will be reserved seating, though, for you all at the closing session until 9:30, right down front. So we've got your seats saved. I am going to make every attempt to manage time so that we all are comfortable. We have plenty of time to stroll over. If indeed we run a little bit longer, Maureen has agreed to step up to the podium because I need to get over there in time to head up the closing session. Those councilors who will be introduced as incoming division presidents or ALA executive board members should leave earlier. We'll all probably around 9 o'clock we need to leave so we can assemble backstage in room N249 at the convention center prior to the start of the program. Cheryl Malden, ALA awards program coordinator, will meet you at the door of this council room. Huh? I love it, to escort you to your location. Good, because I always get lost. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. We have well over 75 councilors, thank you, present, and therefore we have a quorum. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolve clauses should be read. I would again suggest that those of you all who are on the agenda to report, come up to the stage and sit beside Keith Michael Fields, well, actually, on the other side of the podium there, shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Thank you. The agenda, council document number 8.7, revised 6:30:14, 6:40 p.m., and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available on ALA Connect and at the council documents pickup table in the back of the room. We've received no new resolutions to add under new business. Is there any new business to add to this morning's agenda? Seeing no one at the, microphone 7.
Hattie Dudley, Arkansas Chapter Counselor, point of personal privilege. Can I borrow someone's iPhone charger? I have an iPhone 5. Pam, thank you.
Wonderful. Hearing no additions, I declare the agenda adopted. ALA Policy 8.4.2.3 provides that memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at the beginning of the last session of ALA Council at the annual conference. I will now read the names of persons recognized by memorial resolutions. Let us stand as I read the names of those being remembered today. They are Eliza Drizang, Marilyn Lee Miller, Emily Stewart Boyce, Margaret Mary Maggie Kimmel, Bertie McLennan, Nancy Garden, Esther Crawford, Granitha Session Brunson, and Ernie D. Mattia. Thank you. Please be seated. We have received one tribute to announce today, resolution honoring the 75th anniversary of the Association of College and Research Libraries, ACRL. Copies of the memorials, tributes, and testimonials are available at the council documents pickup table in the back of the room. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 13.2 and calls upon Patricia A. Wand, Chair of the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, to present the annual estimates of income for fiscal year 2015 on behalf of ALA Treasurer Mario Gonzalez, who was unable to attend this meeting. Pat?
Here I am before you today for my final act as impersonator of ALA Treasurer Mario Gonzalez. We will look at the annual estimates of income and budgetary ceiling. And I'll ask you to approve the budgetary ceiling for the fiscal year 2015. You will recall from our presentation on Saturday, remember way back on Saturday, that I reviewed the preliminary fiscal year 2015 budget. Our financial value proposition drives the budget process, and the fiscal year 2015 budget is predicated on various priorities and initiatives. The programmatic priorities, which come from our current strategic plan, and we call them within this plan key action items. The budget is based on strategic initiatives, on highlights. We look at the highlights for the year and list them here for you, as well as we offer our key initiatives for your review. Our report Saturday laid out the total budgeted revenues for 2015 compared to the current year's budgeted revenues offered to you here. This is for the entire organization. Keep that in mind. And we also presented the total ALA budgeted expenses. And then I went on to highlight the budget by the largest accounts, starting with the general fund, showing in this slide a two-year comparison of the revenues and a two-year comparison with the budgeted expenses. I also offered you an interesting perspective here on the general revenue producing units, the big ones, the general fund big ones, highlight here the net revenues that we acquired and expect to acquire in the upcoming year over a three-year period. Our two largest revenue sources bring in enough revenue to more than cover their own expenses, and this net revenue then from their operations goes into our general fund to help cover important functions within the organization that do not generate revenue. For example, the Office of Intellectual Freedom, the Washington Office, the Public Information Offices. These are just a few examples of the kinds of programs that we must offer within the organization and must have revenue to support. I went into the division revenues and expenses and again offered you a three-year overview and also our roundtables offering you a three-year revenue. Now, let's move to the action item for today. And that is to look at the annual estimate of income for fiscal year 2015 and to look at our budgetary ceilings. The total ALA fiscal year 2015 budgetary ceiling means we combine the net asset balance from 2014, our unencumbered balance remaining at the end of this current fiscal year, and we estimate our incoming revenues for the fiscal year 2015. And that combined makes the budgetary ceiling. I present details here and more details in your written report, giving you a breakdown of our sources of revenue for the fiscal 2015 in the general fund. And this is a bit of a breakdown that helps us understand where that income is coming through. And then we look at the division budgetary ceiling, including their healthy net asset balance, and the round tables, including also a net asset balance. I offer that we expect for grants and awards, various categories of income listed here, and then the long-term investment annual estimate of income. This is what we expect our long-term investments to contribute to the ALA fiscal year 2015 budget. This is not the prediction of the gross income in that long-term investment itself. This is just the income we expect to be able to use from that long-term investment. Okay. Let's see, make sure that we're here. All right. So the bottom line from all of these categories is $64,078,221. This budgetary ceiling has been reviewed and approved by the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, by the Finance and Audit Committee, and by the Executive Board. And so, on behalf of our treasurer, Mario Gonzalez, I request council to approve the fiscal year 2015 budgetary ceiling of $64,078,221. Are there any questions?
Is there any discussion on this motion? If not, I will ask for a vote. All those in favor of approving the budgetary ceiling for fiscal year 2015, please raise your hand. Opposed? The motion passes. Mark your ballot. Whoa, that's kind of nice.
Whoops.
Fiscal year 2015 budgetary ceiling.
Thank you very much, Council. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your encouraging words to me throughout this annual conference. And most importantly, thank you for being members of the American Library Association.
Thank you, Pat. She did absolutely yeoman's work at this conference. I now call your attention to ALA Council Document 12.3 and ask Councillor John C. Sandstrom, Chair of the Council Election Tellers Committee, to present the 2014-2015 Committee on Committees and the 2014-2015 Planning, I think it's the 2016, Planning and Budget Assembly Election Results. John?
Good morning, everyone. As you know, we've had our election for the last couple of days for these two committees. 141 councilors called for their ballots in the specified periods between 5:30 p.m. Sunday, June 29th. I think these are last year's dates. And 1:30 Monday, June 30th at 1:30. That's right. For the Committee on Committees, 140 ballots were cast. And then one ballot was returned blank. I'm pleased to announce that the elected councilors for the Committee on Committees are Ann Crudson, Karen E. Downing, Jim Kuhn, and Susan F. Gregory. Congratulations. Congratulations. For the Planning and Budget Assembly, only 130 ballots were cast. There were no void ballots. And so I'm very glad to announce that the following three councilors at large were elected to serve two-year terms, 2014 through 2016, on the Planning and Budget Committee Assembly. They are Ishmael Abdullahi, Matt Sizek, and Loida A. Garcia-Thibault. Congratulations. And the following two chapter councilors were elected to serve two-year terms, 2014 and 2016, on the Planning and Budget Assembly. And those are Stephanie Bronstein and Regina Greer Cooper. Again, congratulations.
Well, those of you who were elected to the COC and PBA, please stand so we can recognize you as a group.
And so on behalf of the Council Tellers Committee, Kent Slade, Sandy Wee, and myself, thank you all very much.
Thank you, John. I now direct your attention to ALA CD number 20.5 through 20.7 and call upon Vivian R. Wynn, Chair of the Committee on Legislation, to report. Vivian?
Good morning, everyone. My report includes two action items, but I would like to take just a very, very quick few minutes to talk about a few highlights that represent the work of COL in the last while. I'm excited, actually, to announce that we, in response to the Executive Board's call for three priorities for the Association, Advocacy, Information Policy, and Professional Development, the COL has created a new subcommittee, which will be called Federal Legislative Advocacy Group. This is a different approach that we'll be taking to enhance our ability to do legislative advocacy, and I need all of your help. So this will be a very focused group of people who stand ready to help us as issues may come forward through Congress, and we will have a file of people who are in the districts of committee members on important committees as work is being done. So what we're looking for, not to serve actually on the subcommittee, but in our wide network or list of advocates, are people who already have a personal connection with their legislators, who have the ability to walk into the office and be recognized, and who can carry our message in a way that really gets to the elected official. If you are one of those people, or if you know people who have experience with this kind of work, please have them contact the Washington office or contact me directly as we gear up and get this subcommittee going. We appreciate your help with that. Obviously, the mission is to find an improved way of implementing grassroots lobbying for Senate and House issues. Excuse me. Net neutrality is another area that we have spent a great deal of time on. There is a resolution in this report. That's one of our action items. I know it's a topic a lot of people have been talking about and concerned about. We did have a program here with Gigi Sohn from the FCC presenting, and there was a question concerning comments for FCC. They have an open period of time for people to send in comments, and I believe that the access to that is going online, open internet, one word, at fcc.gov, and you will find the place to file your comment. I also wanted to mention the Legislative Assembly. This is the support group that helps us make our communication back and forth with the units. We have been working very hard to increase the interaction, and we urge your units to send us a rep and fill out the information that we are asking so that we are sure that we have your legislative concerns and can incorporate that into the work that we are doing. Likewise, we have set up a much better plan for giving our legislative update information back to the units. And I would also like to take this time to thank the Federal Depository Library Program Task Force, in particular, Maggie Farrell, the chair. They have worked, Maggie, they have worked since 2012. I tried to calculate. I think over 500 hours is represented in the work that they have done. And bear with me, I would just like to recognize the committee members, Ann Elias, Janet Fisher, Lori Getch, Mary Mallory, Bruce Sargent, Laura Sars, Robbie Sattel, and of course the ALA staff person working with that group, Jessica McGilray. The first of our guests, please. I have often been impressed by work done by groups in ALA, but I have been particularly impressed and thankful for the work of that group. The two resolutions, the action items that are included in this, the first one is CD 20.6.
Thank you. Would you read the result?
I'm sorry. I can't be the only one whose voice sounds like this, right? This is the revised version of CD 49, which was referred to COL in a year ago. I just want to make a note that we did work on it. We did make some changes, but we also had conversation with the originator, that being Councillor Roman. And we feel like we are on the same page. Resolution on digitization of U.S. government documents. Resolved that the American Library Association, on behalf of its members, supports and encourages a national preservation plan for federal depository library program materials. Two, encourages policies that promote digitization with a reasonable number of dispersed preserved copies of print FDLP materials. Three, supports technologies that guarantee long-term, robust, verifiable, complete, accurate, authentic, preservable, and usable digital formats. Four, works with the Government Printing Office, GPO, and the Federal Depository Library community on developing procedures to authenticate and ingest digital and digitized content into FDCIS from federal depository libraries and federal agencies. And five, support the creation of a no-fee, searchable online inventory of digital and digitized government materials with downloadable metadata.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Microphone five.
Good morning, Brian Schottlander, Alex Division Counselor. The Association for Library Collections and Technical Services speaks strongly in favor of this resolution. Yesterday, the board accepted a report from its PARS section, the Preservation and Reformatting section, which reviewed and responded to the task force report that Maggie's group prepared. We have forwarded that response to Maggie, and she in turn has distributed it to her task force, and we stand ready to help in any way that we think we can with our expertise. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone, I will call for a vote. All those in favor of CD 20.6, Resolution on Digitization of U.S. Government Documents, please raise your hand. All those opposed? Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD 20.6.
The second action item is CD 20.7, Resolution reaffirming support for national open internet policies and network neutrality. Resolved that the American Library Association, one, reaffirms its support for network neutrality and open internet policies that enable access in the library through remote access to library resources or by other means. Two, calls on the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, to codify network neutrality principles following its notice of proposed rulemaking, docket number 14-28. Three, encourages library supporters to become engaged in the FCC's current notice of proposed rulemaking on network neutrality. And four, urges library supporters to advocate for the development of enforceable policies, whether in legislative proposals or regulatory proceedings, that ensure that the Internet remains an open platform for activities such as information exchange, intellectual discourse, civic engagement, creativity, innovation, and learning.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Microphone 7. Oh, microphone 4.
First. Christine Haig, PLA Division Counselor, PLA Board endorses this.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Thank you, Vivian, for your great report. On this particular resolution, I'm wondering why there's no mention of some of the legislation that has been introduced in Congress relative to net neutrality. Do we have a position on those items that have been submitted? Is it appropriate to mention them in this resolution, or is the expectation that there be some separate process of either supporting those or commenting on those? This is such a critically important issue. I mean, right now, I think that libraries are in the slow lane unless there's a major shift in FCC policy or in legislation. So I'm wondering if you could give a little more information on the broader scope of the net neutrality discussions.
Well, I think to answer your first question, this resolution needs to be there much as our earlier net neutrality resolution from 2006 to be the groundwork, the basis for the work that we are doing on this issue and the Washington office staff is doing. So I think in a resolution such as this, which may be a policy position that we rely on for years, specific legislation is probably not the place for this to be.
Microphone 4.
Doug Lehman, ACRL counselor. I met with the ACRL board yesterday. They unanimously endorsed this resolution, as is noted in the resolution itself, and I wanted to do that on the floor of council. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
Aaron Dobbs, Leda counselor. Forgot who I was, sorry. Leda board endorsed this yesterday afternoon.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? All right, I will call for a vote. We are voting on the resolution reaffirming support for national open internet policies and network neutrality. All of those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD 20.7.
Thank you. Those are the two action items. I did want to just mention that there was a very long discussion within our COL meetings concerning the resolution on preserving public access to scientific and technical reports available through the National Technical Information Service. And we felt that we needed more work on this, so we have tabled work on that to midwinter with the request for our subcommittee GIS to continue working on the format and content of that resolution.
Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. Just one housekeeping thing. On the very first whereas, there's a quotation and a number that is going to mean nothing to anybody but us. So if something could be done to identify what that is beyond putting numbers, that would be, I think, important.
I'm not sure where you are, Larry.
Whereas America's libraries, quote, preserve our democratic society by making available the widest possible range of viewpoints, options, and ideas, in parentheses, 53:8. Nobody's going to know that.
It should be at the end of the report under history. It's a policy number.
No, he's...
I'm saying that anyone receiving this, Congress or any place else, is not going to know what 53.8:8 is.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
No, that is the end of my report, with the exception of saying thank you to the Washington staff and to the hard work of the COL committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much to the entire committee. Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Earlier in our council discussion, I don't think Vivian was there, we did talk about some of the midwinter-related sort of reorganization activities that were going to be pursued. And I raised then a concern about how we address organization-wide our public policy stance. I want to encourage the Committee on Legislation to discuss within its own membership and its own expertise how it might reconceive of how it does its work. Clearly, the creation of a new advocacy subcommittee suggests that there is some issue that the committee has at least identified, but I think it certainly deserves the broadest participation of COL in looking at our public policy stance. Clearly, the report suggests even more groups involved in our public policy life than I had suggested earlier. And I think it really needs a concentrated amount of organizational activity and energy to bring it together to be more effective. Thank you.
Thank you. I now direct your attention to ALA CD number 19.3 through 19.17 and call upon Douglas Archer, Chair of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, to report. Doug?
Thank you. You have the written report. I will not go through the details of what we have done this year, except to say it's been an interesting year, as always, in intellectual freedom land. Begin with thanks instead of ending there. Thanks very, very much to the diligent, steady, and so helpful work of the OIF, the Office for Intellectual Freedom, for the committee itself, all its members, liaisons, and its subcommittee on privacy. We have before you, I'll go directly to it, 14 interpretations of the Library Bill of Rights. We went through all 25 and looking for possible updates. These are the ones that we felt needed at least minor adjustments, some more than minor. And they have been out on the web and Connect since May, with one exception. And I want to highlight that for you. The number 8, Intellectual Freedom Principles for Academic Libraries, an interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights, just became available the last couple of days. It was an ACRL document originally. It was reviewed by their Committee on Professional Values. They made suggestions for changes, addition of 2 words. So I wanted to highlight that since you didn't get a chance to see it previously. If you turn to page 18, you'll see that the word instruction was added to the introduction, simply to cover library collections, services, and instruction. And then down on page 19, under item 10, in the long list of things that we're not going to discriminate, we encourage that we do not discriminate on the basis of, they added, and we affirmed adding age. We now have students coming to colleges and community colleges that are in a variety of age groups, not your typical student, both older and younger, so they added age. Those are the only 2 changes to that particular document. Otherwise, I bring before you all 14 interpretations for your approval. These, if approved, will go in as revised documents in the new Intellectual Freedom Manual, which we fervently hope will be published later this summer, early fall. And then, of course, after it's produced, we get back to work on the next round of revisions for because technology is constantly challenging us and the changing cultural climate with new issues. So I move the adoption of the 14 interpretations.
Is there any discussion on the motion of approving CD 19.3 through 19.17? Microphone 7.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large. Forgive me, folks at Forum who've heard me complain a couple times already. But I will probably vote to approve. But I wanted to point out something that I really still have a problem with, the labeling and rating systems section that says, in addition, the inclusion of ratings on bibliographic records and library catalogs is a violation of the Library Bill of Rights. How many of us are violating the Library Bill of Rights with either the inclusion of non-record specific ratings or next generation catalogs? I find the language technically out of date. I find our discussion of bibliographic records and library catalogs arcane. And as much as I would love to be a better librarian, I'm still pretty busy serving patrons. So I think there's still a problem with this section of the interpretation.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Mike Marlin, Executive Board. I feel bad that I didn't catch this, and maybe a little too late, but maybe for the next iteration. But on the interpretation about discrimination and the various different things that can be discriminated against, there is physical and learning disability, but I don't see sensory disability, nor do I see cognitive disability, which is broader than simply learning disability. So if you could consider that maybe for next time, or if that's just housekeeping, put those in, I'd be grateful. Thank you.
Microphone 7.
Karen Schneider, Councilor at Large. First, I concur with Andrew. There's portions of this that continue to help to wear parachute pants. It's going to be a while till we fix that. The other thing that I did want to say, though, I thought the program yesterday, the speaker was wonderful. I thought the comments were frank and interesting. I thought Bob Wedgeworth, I was deeply touched by the frankness of his assessment of what happened. And I was also impressed by the thoroughness of the research that went into the videos and discussion regarding the speaker. Thanks.
Microphone number 4.
Daniel Cornwall, Alaster Chapter Counselor. I will be voting in favor of approving this package. But in addition to Andrew's comments, I do want to note for the record that the cataloging groups within ALA that have been working on RDA actually have fields for recording content rating systems within the record for things that, for when a rating appears on the item in hand. And I really believe that this needs to be reconciled in the next edition. Thank you.
Seeing no, microphone 6.
Sue Kam, Councillor at Large. With respect to the issue of cataloging and identifying MPAA ratings and catalog records, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a provision for such a field in ACR2. And just because it's there, we don't necessarily have to use it. The library where I worked, our AV collection was primarily a browsing collection. And although we had records in the catalog, I don't think very many people looked at the catalog to locate videos. So I think that this can stand as it is without being a violation of the Library Bill of Rights. Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Councilor at Large. One of the problems, of course, with listing groups which we don't want to discriminate against is that we can leave some of them out. And one that also ought to be considered for the next edition is one that I think is a definite problem, and that is gender identity.
Microphone six.
Lauren Comito, Counselor at Large. I will probably also vote for this as a package, but while I think that discriminatory labeling against groups is absolutely wrong, we do frequently ask parents to make judgment calls about for their own children about what their children view and read and listen to. And so doing things like taking the teen or mature rating off of a video game, for instance, in the record might make it so that a parent might think it was okay that it didn't go with their values. So I feel like if we're going to ask parents to make their own decisions about values, we should be providing them the information that they can refer to, while sometimes flawed, to make those decisions for their own families.
Microphone six.
Walter Betts, counselor, Texas chapter counselor. The issue with RDA and MARC and the fields for the different types of ratings. MARC is our carrier, 521 is the field, and it is obviously optional. But RDA, which is something that has been produced by our association in conjunction with other associations, tells us how to encode that information. More importantly, in a pedagogical, trying to figure out how to say this grammatically correctly, we teach our catalogers to encode the information that they see on the item. This is a rating that is plastered on the front of the item. It is not something that we can necessarily ignore. It's not like a Lexile rating that one can then apply to an item third hand. And so it goes beyond just what the style manual, in this case RDA, says we can do. It's what we've been teaching our catalogers for generations to do. The third thing is, the majority of our libraries get copy catalog records, especially for AV. Our AV vendors are including this, and so unless we're going to teach our copy catalogers to start deleting information out of the record that could be considered viable information, it's going to be there. This is not an issue that just affects small libraries. Obviously it does, but even affects the New York Public Library when I check to make sure that they do show the data in their catalog. You always have the option to turn off a field and keep the data in it, but turn off the display. That's a possibility, but I think our catalogers and the Intellectual Freedom Committee need to meet.
Microphone seven. Five. Sorry.
That's quite all right. Elena Rosenfeld, Colorado Chapter Counselor. Speak on behalf of the patrons who are the virtual public. We have floating collections, which means items don't automatically come back to the same shelves when we have multi-branch locations. We have a public that is relying on the virtual catalog to be the same as the physical item. And from that perspective, I also have concerns about the labeling statements as written, and still am in support overall. So thank you.
Microphone seven.
Andrew Pace, Counselor at Large. I've submitted a motion. I'd like to table the labeling and rating systems portion of the interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights until the various interest groups that have been identified, RDA, some of the cataloging folks, IT, have a chance to discuss it more broadly.
The motion has been made to table the labeling and rating systems portion of the interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights in document CD, it is document CD 19.12. Okay, it's actually a motion to refer to the parties, to OIF, to consult with the parties you mentioned. Is there discussion on the motion to refer?
Needs a second?
Yeah. Oh, do you have a second, Andrew?
Yes. I second it.
Thank you. Is there discussion on the motion to refer? Microphone three.
Eric Cease, Counselor at Large. Outgoing chair of IFRT, so I've been involved in some of this, even if I haven't been on IFC. I think individual cases and things that we run into regarding the rating system can certainly be problematic in some cases, but I think the general principle stands, and what we're doing here is talking to the general principle, and for that reason, I choose to not support the referral of this document. I'd rather go forward with it because, in fact, as far as I'm concerned, we're looking at a general principle, and I think the principle is sound.
Yeah.
Microphone six.
Nick Buron, Council at Large. I stand in support of Councillor Pace to refer this. And hearing us talk about this for a couple of days and hearing us right now, everyone was coming up very uncomfortable to say that I, of course, will vote for this whole package, but... and I do have a problem with some of the language and how we deliver what our customers are asking us to deliver right now and the metadata that they would like and the decisions that they would like to make for themselves. So I would like to refer. Thank you.
Could I?
Microphone seven. Oh, Doug.
I just want to point out that the interpretation that is being considered at the moment is has revisions in it from the earlier interpretation. If this interpretation is not approved, the older version remains policy and will go into the manual unrevised. And we did add, does not speak to all the questions that have come up, but we did add a phrase at least recognizing that libraries do not advocate or use prospective labels, does not preclude them from answering questions about those labels. That's additional language. But if this is not acted on, and then the old policy, which doesn't do any adjusting, will be still in force.
Microphone seven.
John Sandstrom, Councilor at Large. Doug, thank you very much. You just changed what I was going to say. I'm stepping down now.
Microphone four.
Ann Crutzen, Councilor at Large. So I was part of the spring retreat that really examined all the chapters that you see before the 19.12. We did look at the labeling and rating systems extensively. We tried to cut out parts that that were laundry lists, and maybe the MPAA was in there, but we wanted to make it succinct. It is a, we wanted it to be best practices and intellectual core principles and to stand timeless. So, you know, technology is so fast, it runs, there's tracks on my back when I try to keep up with it. I think that the way that it is right now can be applied electronically, and I know that we want to please our patrons, but we can't please them all, and we need to stand up for our principles. I think that some school librarians have actually asked me to implement some rating systems and attach it directly into our bibliographic record, and I went to our catalogers, and they said, we just don't have the staff to do that, first of all, and then we can't be equitable because there are so many different rating systems, and if everyone did that, then how helpful is that as a directional aid? So I am opposed to the motion that
to refer.
Counselor, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, to refer that Counselor Pace had, respectfully, I disagree. Thanks.
Thank you. Microphone three.
So Andrew Wertheimer, Chapter Counsel from Hawaii, and I'm speaking as more of my day job, which is as an LIS instructor, and I assign the Intellectual Freedom Manual, and I really want to make sure that we have the most current content in the handbook. And so since the resolution, we will still have something on labeling in place. And I know that they're already starting to plan the 10th edition, so I'd like to speak against this motion and know that the IFC will continue to have discussions with all of the different units on RDA and related implications. So thank you.
Microphone seven.
Karen Schneider, Councilor at Large. I speak strongly in support of the referral, the motion to refer. We are doing what council is supposed to do. We looked at an omnibus package. We had concerns with it. Concerns have been popping up over the last several days. We stay on the conference, you know, as part of the ALA hostage crisis into day five, you know, in the middle of the desert. specifically so that when we have concerns about something, we can set it aside. And I would suggest to Andrew respectfully that he's got a great teachable moment in what ALA does for its members, which is we raise flags when we have them. Thank you.
Microphone six.
Oh. Okay. Lauren Comito, Counselor at Large. I think my major issue with, I would support the referral. I think my major issue with this is that I don't see how intellectual freedom is served by withholding information in a bibliographic record.
Microphone five. Brian.
Oh, sorry. Brian Schottlander, Lex Division Counselor. As its seconder, obviously I speak in support of Andrew's motion, but I did want to share a word or two about why. So my problem with this interpretation is that it's kind of a, you should forgive the expression, a hodgepodge of language having to do with objectionable type labeling and ranking systems, and language having to do with what is referred to as viewpoint neutral labels and ranking systems, but then goes on to make a sweeping statement that the inclusion of ratings on bibliographic records and library catalogs is a violation of the Library Bill of Rights, dropping the distinction between viewpoint neutral and dispositional ones. So I think this one definitely needs work, and I strongly support referring it.
Microphone seven.
Jennifer Bocharusa, Counselor. The delay and the reason why I do not support the referring back is because of the publication issue, but I agree that this needs to be worked on. And because this is a Library Bill of Rights, it is not a publication we're worried about, but the policy. So the policy can be changed next year, but the publication has to go forward with the new interpretation as we have it right now. Or as hopefully we'll vote for it right now. So I vote against this. However, I do hope that the committee rushes a new policy for maybe next year.
Microphone four. No. Seeing no one else, microphone three.
I apologize. Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I'd like to remind people what Doug said. I think the intent of this will be completely turned on its head if we pass it, in that the previous language, it would be the language that would go into the published interpretation, which is even worse than the language that the people making the referral want to have. So if you don't like the language about the labeling, you really want to vote against this, because otherwise you'll have worse language.
Microphone seven.
Andrew Pace, Counselor at Large. First of all, Larry, it's the existing language, not the previous language yet. until we vote on it. I did look at the existing language, and it's not substantially enough different to me to be concerned about, you know, the threat of us going back to keeping the existing language. And as far as intent, I think I've succeeded in my intent, was just for us to discuss a portion of the interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights, which I have never liked.
Microphone six.
Nick Buron, Counselor at Large. These are working, living documents that are meant to be changed when they need to be changed. This hasn't been changed since 2009. I think we can wait six more months, even though there is a publication. It is something that we are constantly talking about. We've addressed something here. We've noticed something. Let's refer it. Let's fix it so that it's always a moving document.
I just say that we already intend to continue work on the issue. One of the other issues that hasn't come up here is the question of user-generated content, and that is not addressed here. We are anticipating another interpretation that will address it, and also an opportunity to address the different portions of the issues of labeling, positive, negative, and rating systems, and do further articulation of the differences in a future document.
Microphone four.
Yeah, Ann Crutzen, Counselor at Large. I just wanted to address Counselor Pace, who had said at forum that maybe this is something the catalogers might benefit from if there's a educational piece. And I think that that would really be effective, because I actually forwarded this chapter to our catalogers in the library system, and then they complied. So I don't know, what to do here, except to, I think that it would be a better route if we did some sort of educational thing rather than referring or trying to change chapters. So I just wanted to tell you from my experience when
point of order
was made for
microphone seven.
I didn't think that
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large, is the speaker talking to the motion to refer?
Yes.
She is?
I am, because okay. I'm saying, like, let's make educational flyers and pieces and educate through the cataloging sections, departments, rather than referring. Thank you, Counselor Margolis. Thanks.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Bobby Newman, Counselor at Large. I want to speak strongly in favor of tabling the motion in support of Andrew. I'm sorry, referring the motion in support of Andrew. I feel like the threat to revert to the current language is not sufficient to not table this at this point. I know as librarians working in exciting times with fast change that we often accept good enough as a standard to move forward, but in this case, in this language, it is not good enough. And if we pass this, we're saying that we accept this right now, whereas if we stand with the language that exists, we have the opportunity to change that going forward, and we should refer it to the appropriate people.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Mike Marlin, Executive Board. I just have a quick clarification question for the chair. How often are these interpretations published? And then secondly, could there be an online version that is more fluid, that could be voted on prior to the next publication in this whole cycle?
The interpretations are brought to council whenever there's a demand for change in interpretations. It could be every 6 months if council so desired and the demands were there. Publication is a different issue. The manual is going to be produced later this year, and that will be the most widely displayed and widely available and used tool, and the interpretations in it should be the most up-to-date at that time when it's published. But any changed interpretation can be posted on the web. We have an electronic version, so you don't have to wait until the next edition of the manual to make the changes. It's just that whatever's going to be out there in the manual will be widely distributed.
And finally, could the print publication be delayed 6 months, or is that
it won't happen?
Cause
not ALA publications. We can leave this out, and we'll leave the old interpretation in, and it will go forward if that's the desire of council.
Thank you.
Microphone four.
Julius C. Jefferson, Jr., Counselor at Large, IFC member. I strongly oppose referring this back to IFC. I agree with several counselors that the point is, and I understand that there are many issues. This issue, IFC put this issue out before council back in May. We had ample opportunity to hear from you then, to refer it, to get some other input. We didn't hear any input until we got to this particular conference. I agree with the chair that it will be maybe 5 years before we get another printed copy of the manual. So I strongly oppose this.
This will, I will call on you in 1 second, but please, can we hold the comments to short comments so that we can proceed? We're running out of time. Microphone four.
Daniel Cornwall, Alaska Chapter Counselor, and I will comply. I just want to say that I have commented on Connect several times since May when they were posted. IFC has heard For me, I think at least from one other on a separate issue, it is simply not true that these were posted and we did not provide input. Thank you.
Microphone four.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. I'm kind of embarrassed and sorry to do this, but could we just go over what the original language is and how this changes? If we refer it back and we get the original, the old version published, what will that say as opposed to getting this version published? And can we decide whether we want one or the other? I'm sorry. Thank you.
The marked up version, which shows both the original language and the proposed changes, is in ALA Connect. I do not have the marked up language here today. I have the final language, so I can't go back and do that.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, I will call for a vote on the motion to refer back to IFC the labeling and rating systems portion of the interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights, CD 19.12. All those in favor of referring, please raise your hand. All those opposed, we need a count. All those in favor, please stand. Please be seated. All those opposed, please stand. Thank you. Please be seated. All right, 65 yes, 70 no. The motion fails. We will therefore take a vote on the main motion,
One comment. We will hear the concern. All right. Have heard it.
Mark your ballot. CD 19.12, refer back to IFC. Microphone four.
Chris Corrigan, DCLA chapter counselor. And I made a motion to amend. We're not on that yet? Okay.
Microphone three.
Liz Bischoff, ASCLA counselor. In the very, very last line of the 19.12, it says read and view. I'm not sure that there are ratings on audio, but was there an intent to listen being incorporated under the labeling provisions?
It would, as far as I know, apply to any labeling.
Okay, but you specifically pulled out reading and viewing. And so I wondered if...
It's another improvement that could...
Okay.
It's a friendly suggestion.
Thank you.
From a cataloger.
Microphone four.
Mike Marlin, Executive Board. I just want to point out that there are indeed ratings for audio, particularly in alternate format recordings of books and magazines and other information resources.
Okay,
microphone four.
Chris Corrigan, DCLA chapter counselor. I believe this is for the whole package, so I think I am able to move to amend council document 19.11, bullet point 10. So, what? But this is for the whole package, isn't it?
We are, but you have to pull it off to be considered separately.
When you say, what do you mean?
Your motion will be you move to pull off that one piece to be considered separately, and then we can do changes to
okay.
that.
So moved.
You're referring to 1911,
yes,
right?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, yeah. Can I speak to it now, or?
No.
Okay.
Hold on. Sorry. Wait. Stay there. I've got to get my head together. Just a moment. Okay. 1911, intellectual freedom principles for academic libraries?
Yes, ma'am.
But bullet. That came... Okay.
Again, I thought it was for the whole package.
Yes. If all right. So the motion has been made to... consider 1911 as a separate item, and so we're putting that to the side. We're going to vote on the full package without 1911, and then we can consider any changes to 1911. Microphone three.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. This is exactly the same thing that we did for 20. You don't have to pull it out. You just... make your motion about that particular thing, whether you want to refer it or whatever.
Okay. All right.
So,
Chris, speak to your amendment.
Okay. The motion is to change the language of bullet point 10, and it's going to include for the point that Councilmember Marlin addressed, it's going to include after in between physical and learning disability, it's going to include, comma, sensory, cognitive, or learning disability. And then actually before that, after sexual orientation and in between cultural or ethnic background, we are inserting gender identity.
All right. We will accept that as housekeeping.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Do I have consent?
Yes.
All right. It's housekeeping, and it will be done. Microphone six.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. I was on the Intellectual Freedom Committee when the Library Bill of Rights was being revised, and we worked very carefully not to have laundry lists of people whose views we disagreed with or users of the libraries. I believe that broad but inclusive language is better because you never can tell what kind of group may be popped up against that people can discriminate against. So I would like, what I would like to see IFC do is look at the laundry list of discrimination and try to come up with broader identification.
Thank you. Could I see the main motion then on the screen again? I ask for a vote on the main motion to consider CD 19.4 through 19.17, was it? Okay. Oh, okay. To adopt CD 19.4 through 19.17. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed, please raise your hand. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD 19.4 through 19.17.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Councillors, I apologize. I need to get ready for the closing general session. Thank you for your indulgence, and we are honored to have Maureen Sullivan here to take over the chair.
Point of personal privilege. Last year we thanked Maureen, so this year I really would just want everyone to thank Barbara. Thank you.
I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 40.1 and call upon Martin Garner, Chair of the Committee on Professional Ethics, to report. Martin?
Thank you very much. In the interest of time, I'll keep this very brief. The Ethics Committee decided we wanted to have as much fun as IFC, so we have our first interpretation ever of the Code of Ethics in 75 and a half years. This interpretation is on the topic of copyright. We developed this in response to member requests for guidance coming from the ethics community on this matter. This was developed in consultation with the OITP Advisory Committee Copyright Education Subcommittee and the Committee on Legislation's Copyright Subcommittee. We thank them and especially Carrie Russell for their guidance as we prepared this document. It's been available for review. And so I will just jump right to our action item, which is that the Committee on Professional Ethics moves to adopt copyright and interpretation of the Code of Ethics, CD 32.2.
Is there any discussion of the report? Microphone 7.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Thank you for your report, and thank you for making history with a new interpretation. I have two questions. Number one, I don't really see anything that addresses some of the remarkable court rulings of the past couple months related particularly to fair use. We've seen a lot of court action, the Authors Guild case and a few others, and I'm wondering whether the interpretation would benefit from some acknowledgement of that recent legal history around fair use. The other issue also adjudicated, and I think in a very positive way, are the rights of people who cannot read a normal book to have access and for our interpretation of fair use to be expanded as a result of that. And the courts have really done some remarkable work to support people with disabilities in terms of not only transitional but expansive use of resources that previously were not available. The interpretation, I think, is excellent, but doesn't really focus, as I see it, on any of those issues. And I'm wondering whether you might consider that, not necessarily to change that today, but when you redo this interpretation in the next few months.
If I may respond.
Please, Martin.
We did talk at great length about a variety of issues related to the detail, the other topics of copyright, including fair use, licensing, other issues that will change quickly. As you pointed out, we've got lots of court cases there. This really fell into the purview of the Copyright Education Subcommittee and is not the expertise of the Ethics Committee. And so that's why we chose to break that off, and that second footnote directs people to publications of the Copyright Education Subcommittee. They are actually taking a lot of draft materials that we had developed and will be issuing their own guidance that they can then update much more quickly than having to wait through this the interpretation update process. So we wanted to try to keep this more leaner and on principle and let the current stuff be handled by the folks who are best equipped to do so.
Seems there's no further discussion. We'll move to the committee's action item, which is on the screen before you. Is there any discussion of this motion? If there's no discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Those opposed, also please raise one of your hands. The motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Please mark your ballot, CD number 40.1, and we all thank you, Martin, and your committee for this wonderful work. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 18.1 through 18.4 and call upon Luis Herrera, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to report. Welcome, Luis.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Good morning, everyone. I also would like to begin by letting you all know that there is a comprehensive report from the International Relations Committee. I will highlight this, but also cut to the chase because there is an action item that we are proposing. I'd like to begin by thanking President Stripling for the honor of having served as chair of this wonderful committee. It's a tremendous committee with a lot of great work that happened throughout the year. Certainly, we'd like to also thank Michael Dowling, our staff liaison, and the interns at ALA. So, The international attendees at annual was tremendously robust this year. We had close to 600 international librarians from 78 countries. Fantastic. It's really, really thrilled. And we're looking forward to an even greater number when ALA is in San Francisco next year. So just a plug for my hometown. Also, we had strong delegations from China, Japan, Taiwan, Russia, Nigeria, and due to the wonderful partnerships arranged through IRC and IRT and the International Relations Office, we also are expecting significant participation throughout the next conference. Regarding the IFLA report, we welcomed President-elect Donna Sheeter, who provided wonderful updates on the trends report. It's linked in the document, so I would ask that you refer to the wonderful content there. We're excited to announce that the IFLA conference is coming to Columbus in 2016, so it'll be a tremendous opportunity for Americans to participate in this international experience. We are working on the international strategic plan, also keeping in mind the three strategic areas of advocacy, information policy, and professional development. So the committee is already ahead of the game in that regard. ALA, the International Relations Office, has been doing great work in establishing additional partnerships. So there are several ones dealing with the SARJA, United Arab Emirates partnership that will hold an international book fair along with ALA. So we're expecting about 200 librarians at that conference. We're establishing a great relationship with Germany, and we expect also at their 2016 National Congress to have ALA as a key partner in that regard. So cutting to the heart of the matter today, ALA, IFLA, is asking the library associations and other organizations to become signatories to the Lyon Declaration on Access and Information Development. As you all may be aware, IFLA will be held in Lyon, France this August. The Lyon Declaration is an advocacy document that will be used to positively influence the content of the United Nations post-development agenda. There is the entire document as part of your packet that has the principles, the background of why this is important. The declaration calls upon the United Nations member states to make an international commitment through the post-2015 agenda to ensure that everyone has access to and is able to understand, use, and share the information that's necessary to promote sustainable development. The declaration, again, will be launched at the IFLA Congress in Lyon, France. So far, over 50 associations and organizations have become signatories. And here, domestically, the Office of Information Technology Advisory Committee has supported it, the Association of Research Libraries as well. And at our meeting at the International Relations Committee, they voted in favor of becoming a signatory. And also, it is in keeping with the Library Bill of Rights. So the resolution, or the resolved statement, rather, states that the Council of the American Library Association directs that ALA become a signatory to the Lyon Declaration on Access to Information and Development. And that concludes my report.
And thank you. And I appreciate your help in getting us closer to the planned time of adjournment. But before we move to discussion of the motion and acting on the motion, I must offer the body the opportunity. Are there any remarks on the report? And seeing none, we can proceed. Is there discussion of the motion? And here it comes. Microphone three.
Loida Garcia Fibo, Councilor at Large. I would like to speak to encourage everyone to support ALA signing this declaration. It will greatly help us at the IFLA level to continue advocating for access to information to be a central part of the Sustainable Development Goals. These goals are going to be in place after the Millennium Goals end in 2015. And these goals help developing countries and developed countries to impact their policy, finances, and help to everyone in their regions. So thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone, I will ask for a vote. Those who are in favor, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. Any opposed, please raise a hand. Thank you. The motion passes. And mark your ballot, Council Document 18.1. Thank you very much, Luis, and our best wishes to your committee. And one last thing, all of us are looking forward to having you be our host at annual conference in San Francisco. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for his final announcements. Keith?
Thank you, Madam Sullivan. I will give you a last update on conference registration. The final registration is 13,019 registrants and 5,607 exhibitors for a grand total of 18,626. Not quite Chicago last year, but we did end up ahead of Anaheim the year before. If you would ask you to please place your empty portfolio in the storage boxes at the document pickup table, we will retain them carefully for use at the 2015 midwinter meeting. And those for those of you whose council terms end at this conference, please feel free to take your portfolio with you.
Thank you. And I would ask that you just hold your further work to get ready for adjournment. We have a couple people at microphones, and I believe microphone 5 is first.
John DeSantis, Councilor at Large. Point of personal privilege, I would just like to note that today, July 1st, is Canada Day, and I'd like to wish a happy Canada Day to my fellow Canadian councillors.
And we all join you. Thank you so much. Microphone 7.
John Sandstrom, Councilor at Large. Point of personal privilege. Those of you who are a part of this body 5 years ago remember when I showed up in the middle of my chemotherapy sessions with no hair and much more bloated than I remember being. I've been looking at pictures. I'm 5 years clear, and I want to thank you all for the support that I got during that period.
And we, of course, thank you for your service. Microphone 4.
Mike Marlin, Executive Board. I have two quick announcements. One, I just learned that on the WIPO treaty, the WIPO Marrakesh treaty for the cross-border sharing of alternate format works with for countries with copyright exemptions, India voted to ratify the treaty yesterday, and Kenya, I believe, will be doing so today, and I was told that that's the fastest within 1 year that any country has ever signed a WIPO treaty. So thank you all for your support on that. And secondly, for any dog lovers in the room, if you'd like to come say hi to Vivaldi when session is over, come and see us.
Thank you so much, Mike. Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Councillor at Large. The Development Office sent out a letter to councillors about the matching fund for the Stonewall Award. And I want to thank all of you who contributed. We did match the full $15,000 and then some.
Thank you very much. And before I remind us as we're closing of the steps to take, I want to let Sandy Wee know that there's a request that she go to the projectionist table before departing this room. Please check to see if you've signed your voting card before passing it to the aisles for collection, although Lois Ann's ahead of us on this one. Unsigned voting cards will be void. We have concluded our agenda. If there is no objection, the chair declares the third meeting of the ALA Council adjourned. And all of us at the closing general session in a few minutes. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Nice job.
That was
fun. Like
the
good old days.
Yeah, it was right. Good. It was fun. And you've done a nice job at this conference.
Sorry?
And people know that you're learning. Right.